how Jesus has called us to be freed people. And it's a wonderful blessing that we have, that we no longer have to be captive to the things that held us captive when we didn't know God. But we put on Christ in baptism, and that frees us. It lets us do a lot of things, but maybe the one that is, well, at least it's as important as anything else. Why am I not being able to? There, no. Okay. Why can't I advance that? There it goes. Thank you. Did you do that, Ted, or did I? Anyway, it's called the ghost in the machine. One of the things that's really important to us, particularly those of us who are Christians, is that we're freed so that we can overcome Satan. Galatians, the fifth chapter, at verse 1, Paul writes, "For freedom did Christ set us free. Stand fast, therefore, and be not entangled again with the yoke of bondage." What a tremendous blessing. Now, we talked last week about Jesus dying on the cross and what all of that meant. But the point that I wanted to make is Jesus addressed a lot more than just my past. My past was as bad as it could be, and there was no way that I could be free of that, but Jesus does more than just release me from my past. Jesus frees me to be able to overcome temptation. And we concluded last week by saying that there are three aspects of temptation that we need to understand. There are the three aspects of temptation that James discusses in James, the first chapter. This morning, we're going to talk about trying to understand the essence of temptation. What exactly is temptation? So we're going to look at two sections of the first chapter of the book of James. The first part that we'll be looking at begins in verse 2. He says, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into diverse temptations, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience." And then the second part that we're going to be looking at is verses 12 through 14. He says, "Blessed is the man that endures temptation, for when he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life, which the Lord hath promised to them that love him. Let no man say when he is tempted, I'm tempted of God. For God cannot be tempted, neither tempteth he any man. But every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed." So there are a couple of things that are presented here that we need to kind of fix in our minds. The first thing is we need to understand what James is saying when he talks about being tempted. What is temptation? I know that we all have a definition of temptation that we have in our mind, but if you look at Thayer makes it clear that this word temptation, remember it's this Greek word G3986, and you see it here in verse 2. I don't think you can see it. When I move my pointer up here, you can't see it. I'm going to step away from the camera for a minute. You see it here in verse 2. You see it
This is a different word, though. Try. We'll talk about that one as well. You see it here in verse 12, temptation. You see, oh, there's that word try again. That's that same word that we saw in the beginning. Then you see temptation here, here, down here. You see it here, and you see it here.
So it's interesting that there are some different words that we need to understand as we go through this. So let's look at what Thayer has to say about this word temptation. And I think it may be broader than what we just kind of supply, because we think we know what that word means already. Thayer says that the root meaning of this word temptation, and you see it there in the Greek, and you see it in the anglicized version of the Greek, is the root meaning is an experiment, an attempt, a trial, or a proving. Now, that's not something that we typically associate with temptation. So let's look at the shades of meaning that Thayer says are attached to this word. And some of this comes from the secular language, because remember, the apostles, when they wrote the New Testament, didn't make up words. They used words that the Greeks would have been familiar with. So they knew what this word meant because they used it all the time, and the apostle used it, and so it carries with it the meaning that it had in secular language. The first shade of meaning that Thayer discusses is a trial or a proving. There's a really interesting use of this word in Galatians, the fourth chapter, at verse 14. Now, the Apostle Paul, by the time he writes the book of Galatians, is pretty beat up. He's been stoned, he's been beaten with rods, he's been shipwrecked. I can imagine that his body was just a mess. And so when he writes to the Galatians, he says this in Galatians 4 at verse 14. That which was a temptation to you in my flesh, you despised not, nor did you reject it, but you received me as an angel of God, even as Christ Jesus. So the Apostle Paul, knowing that he's messed up, says this was an occasion of temptation. My body, beaten as it was an occasion for you to prove something. It served as a test of whether they were going to love the Apostle Paul in spite of the way that he looked, or whether they were going to reject what he said because of the way that he looked. Now, he says there's a second shade of meaning that's associated with this word. And he says it's the trial of a man's fidelity, his integrity, his virtue, his consistency. We understand that our integrity is put to the test. We say we believe in God. And when we come into this building, it's pretty easy, for the most part, for us to act like we believe in God, and we control our temper. We're not given to outbursts of anger when we're in this building. But sometimes there are occasions that arise that test that when we're not in this building, when you're driving down the road and a guy cuts you off. do you respond to him the same way that you respond to the folks in this building? Well, that's a test of integrity. When much younger days, Kim and I had a Coleman folding camp trailer, and I was trying to learn how to back up a trailer. Kim had one job. She was supposed to stand behind the trailer, and she was supposed to give me directions so that I didn't run into anything. She forgot about the manzanita bush that was behind the trailer, and I whacked it. I was supposed to have been looking in the rearview mirror, but instead I was looking at my lovely wife. And my response to her was not the same kind of response that I would have had if I had been in church. You know, that was a test. That was a test for me. How am I going to treat my wife? I'm ashamed of the fact that I failed it. But it was a test. It was a temptation. I would do better today. And that's why right after that, we began unhooking the trailer and backing it up by hand. There is a sense in which God gives us an opportunity to prove our integrity with temptation. And Thayer says that this word has a shade of meaning that can be described this way. It's an enticement to sin, whether arising from desires or from outward circumstances. Keep that in your head. We're going to use that in just a little bit. Then he says there's a distinctly internal temptation to sin. And he says that this internal temptation to sin is what Satan was relying on when he tried to tempt Jesus to sin in the wilderness. Then he says there's another shade of meaning that's associated with this, and it's a little bit different. He says it's the condition of things or the condition of a mental state by which we're enticed to sin or to lapse from faith and holiness. And then he gives this last definition, or this last shade of this meaning of a test or an opportunity to prove. He says it sometimes would be used to refer to adversity or affliction or trouble that was sent by God to prove one's character, one's faith, or one's holiness. And again, remember that. We're going to get back to it. He says, then there is this shade of meaning that's associated with this word. It's a temptation or a trial of God by men. And he says, God cannot be tempted in that way. So in essence, James says, don't even try. That's something that the Greeks thought they could do. They could tempt their gods. And because their gods were false gods, they could do that. Then there's this other word, the trial part. Remember we saw that when we were looking at the original language? And the advantage that I have when I do this and go back is, if I'm using the King James translation plus, KJV plus in U version, it gives me all of these Greek numbers. And so when I get confused, I can look at that Greek number and I can see, aha, this word tempted is not the same word
as this word tried up here. Now, that's important because, remember, we're not interested in the way that the New Testament translators chose to translate this word, because sometimes they use a single word to translate two different words in the Greek. Remember, we've seen that a lot when we talk about love. The Greeks had different words for love, but the New Testament translators, they just lumped it all under love, and so we get confused. We don't see the shades of meaning. But we can use this in the U version when we're looking at the KJV plus, and that'll give us these words. This next word that we need to think about, we've seen temptation. Then there's this word trial. It's a little bit different. Trial is not associated with sin. This is not something that leads to sin. That's the way that they would have used this word, and that's why they would have chosen this. It's a trial. It's an opportunity to prove something. You know, when you go to court, you have to prove that a person did the crime that he's accused of doing. That's what the prosecution has to do. They have to prove that you did what you're accused of doing. That's important, because if they don't prove it, then you won't be convicted. It doesn't have anything to do with sin. It's a proving, it's a test. This is a word that would be used to refer to something that is tried or proved or tested. I wear a wedding ring. This ring that I wear on my finger is stamped on the inside 14 karat. That means that this has been proven to be 14 karat gold. That's why it's stamped on the inside. Somebody did a test on it, and it's stamped, and I can always show this to someone and say, this is 14 karat. Now, let's take all of these ideas and let's try to put this into the context of understanding the essence of what temptation is, as far as James is concerned, as far as Jesus is concerned, helping us to overcome Satan's temptations. First, temptations are sometimes external to me. It's something that happens that I didn't have anything to do with. It's an external opportunity for me to act. And then this word also carries with it the idea of the temptations that are internal to me. This is the motivation to act. What I think is important. This is what I value. This is the thing that I seek. Now, how do those things come together? Well, here's my understanding from what James says. When you take an opportunity to act and you add that to a person's internal motivation to act, that's when you get enticement. That's when you get action. It's opportunity plus motivation equals action. Somebody said, how are you doing today? And I said, well, I'm staying out of trouble. There's no great virtue in it. It's just lack of opportunity. And you know, sometimes that's the case. We would sin if we had the opportunity, but we don't have the opportunity. So God helps us out
And he keeps us from having the opportunities sometimes. It would be a little bit easier for me to get through life if God just took all of the opportunities out of my life. That way I could still have my motivations that are messed up. But if God takes all the opportunities away, my motivations really wouldn't matter, would they? Sometimes you have to have the opportunity to know what your motivation really is. Do you really love your wife? Do you have the opportunity to step out and to commit adultery? When you have that opportunity and you reject that opportunity, that tells you something about your motivation, doesn't it? I really do love my wife. Lo and behold. So God does two things when he helps us to overcome temptation. Sometimes he's going to take away opportunities, or he's going to control opportunities so that they don't come on us in a way that we can't seem to resist them. So God is going to sometimes take opportunities away, keep us protected by not giving us opportunities. Sometimes he's going to just make sure that the opportunity is not overwhelming. And then the second thing God is going to do is he's going to give me new motivations. He's going to teach me to value different things than I used to value. Would you sin if you were sure you could get away with it? Would you step out on your wife if you were on a business trip in Dubai and you knew that nobody in Dubai was ever going to talk to your wife? There's the temptation. Now, I say that this idea of motivation is critically important. And I think we see that as we read through the New Testament, because what Jesus discusses most of the time is the heart. Think about this, and think about the number of times that Jesus addresses the heart. Matthew, the 5th chapter, at verse 27. He says, you have heard that it was said, thou shalt not commit adultery. I say unto you that everyone that looketh upon a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. He just didn't have the opportunity. Matthew 6, beginning at verse 21, or beginning at verse 20. He says, lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust doth consume, where thieves do not break through and steal. For where thy treasure is, there will thy heart be also. This is motivation. The lamp of the body is the eye. If therefore thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light. But if thine eye be evil, thy whole body shall be full of darkness. It is therefore the light that is, if therefore the light that is in thee be darkness, how great is that darkness? That's where we were before. That's where we were when we were captive. We were in darkness. He says, and this is important, no man can serve two masters. Either he'll hate one and love the other, or else he'll hold one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. You cannot have this motivation in your heart. Get wealth. Get it honestly, if at all possible, but by all means, get wealth. That cannot be your motivation if you're going to serve God. Most of us don't have the opportunity to swindle the people that are around us. That doesn't mean that we wouldn't do it if we could. So temptation sometimes helps us to understand what our real motivations are. Matthew 12, Jesus is talking to the Pharisees. He says, "You offspring of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak good things? Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. The good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good things, and the evil man out of his evil treasure brings forth evil things." You just have to have the opportunity. Matthew 15. Beginning at verse 17, he says, "Perceive ye not that whatsoever goeth into the mouth passes into the belly and is cast out into the draught? But the things which proceed out of the mouth, these come forth from the heart." These are the things that defile a man. "Out of the heart come forth evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, railings. These are the things that defile a man. But to eat with unwashed hands, that doesn't defile a man." In Luke 6, beginning at verse 45, the good man out of the good treasure of his heart, and this is where we want to get to, the good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth that which is good. The evil man out of the evil treasure brings forth that which is evil. For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. Ephesians 6, beginning at verse 5. And this is where the Apostle Paul brings this kind of all together. And he says, think about opportunity and what it can do to prove what's in your heart. Servants, be obedient to them, talking to about masters. Servants, be obedient unto them that according to the flesh are your masters, with fear and trembling, with singleness of your heart, as unto Christ. Not in the way of eye service as men pleasers, but as servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, with good will doing service as unto the Lord and not unto men. You see, God is going to give us an opportunity to know what's in our heart, because sometimes God will occupy our boss somewhere else. And we get to show what's in our heart. And when we do that, we understand something, don't we? I really do care about God. When my boss's back is turned, I work just as hard as I do when my boss is standing right there beside me. Isn't temptation a wonderful thing? It lets us know that. It lets us demonstrate it. If we never had the opportunity, we wouldn't know whether we'd take it or not. So temptation's a good thing. Temptation is a proving, it's a testing, it's a trial. But temptation reinforces this idea that opportunity plus motivation equals action. If you're not a Christian, you're going to struggle with this concept. But if you're a Christian, you understand. I put on Christ. I put him on in baptism. I'm freed from that. I don't have to worry about that. Oh, if you're not a Christian, you may have your moments when you effectively work, even when your boss's back is turned, but you can't do it consistently like you can when you're a Christian. Now, we're going to talk more about this. We're going to talk about the other two aspects of temptation that James talks about, the process of temptation, and we're going to talk about overcoming temptation even more. But, you know, as I was preparing all of these things, I ran across this statement. And I think it, in some ways, it sums up what we've been talking about this morning. And it's a statement about fake friends. Fake friends are like shadows. They're with you when it's sunny, but they're nowhere to be found when it's dark. Thank goodness that we have a way to tell the difference between fake friends and real ones. Real ones mean so much to us. And if you want to know who's the realest friend, it's Jesus. There is no darkness where he will not be found.